Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you pack your soccer shoes?
Yeah.
All right. Next time I see you, we'll be on the outside.
All right. Oh, get on the inside of this. Oh, hey, 3 days, seriously? Proud of you, bud.
Thank you.
You know what? Give me another one.
Me too. Gosh, freedom, new business. I am sensing greatness.
I had a fun weekend, Daddy.
Me too, Peanut. But just wait till next weekend. Once I'm out of here, you and I are going to go paint this town red. We'll have so much ice cream, we'll never stop puking.
You're getting good at that.
How'd you do that?
Bye, Daddy.
Bye.
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 In 3 days. Easy peasy.
Hello, world, hear the song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole
snap
lot
your fingers,
of loving
that gets them to look over there. That is misdirection.
Make you happy. We had a dream, we go traveling together. We spread a little loving and we keep moving on. Something always happens whenever we're together. We get a happy feeling when we're singing a song.
The world outside your window is still not great, but here on Post Show Recaps, not only is everything super, but we'll make you happy. We'll make you happy. Kevin?
You can't do a better... I've heard you sing before, Josh. This was a sad attempt at singing on your part.
I wasn't singing. I was just trying to, like, drag out, enunciate the way that the Partridge Family says happy. You didn't know this is the Partridge Family.
I didn't, and I'm gonna just blame that on me being not knowledgeable enough about white people things.
I don't know how you were a white person of a certain age and you escaped the Partridge Family. I'd like to meet you.
I will say this movie did make me happy. I mean, in a time when like everything is not super in the world outside, this movie was very fun and
what a joy.
What a bunch of humor that I think was desperately needed in this particular moment of time. This movie made me happy. Did it blow me away, especially coming after Infinity War?
Is it designed to? No, it's not. This movie is just designed to make you happy. We'll talk about why this podcast, Kevin, it's designed to make people happy as well. I'm so happy to be getting back on the horn with you this week, Kevin. I hope people are happy to be getting back on board the MCU train with us. Sadly, not Thomas the Tank Engine. That train has left the station and remains in the first Ant-Man. But speaking of trains leaving the station, we announced this. We've announced this kind of in like bits and pieces over the past few days, but I'll say it here on the Everything is Super podcast, in case this is your first time hearing this news, that post-show recaps, we are much like Scott Lang and his buddies were days away from launching their own business over the course of the events of Ant-Man and the Wasp. We are just days away, Kevin, as of this recording, from launching the post-show recaps Patreon. The Pusher Recaps Patreon's a thing. Woo!
Yay! Please support us. Love us. I need validation in my life.
Kevin needs validation. We have a very special validation for Kevin tier. It's just tears. That's all we need from you. We need to collect your tears, and we will send them to Kevin in a box. That is how Kevin will be paid from henceforth.
Yes.
No, that tier is not available, and we are ideally going to be paying Kevin and all of our other hosts with money. We would love to be able to do that. So if you've been enjoying the podcast, if you've been enjoying the show, if you've been enjoying this show or some of the others on the podcast network, Kevin, I don't know if you can fathom this, but Post Show Recaps is turning in January 7 years old. Seven years is how long we've been kicking around on Post Show Recaps.
I don't like thinking about that. That's horrifying to me. Has it been that?
Yeah.
What's weird to think it's so long ago. I mean, you and I started I think the first time we recorded together was 5 years ago.
2015.
Yeah, 2015. I had just moved to Los Angeles. I was in my new apartment for like the first time, and we recorded our first episode of our Daredevil podcast for the Netflix show that was about to launch. And we went back and watched the original Daredevil movie.
That's right.
Yeah, that the original Everything is Super, but that movie was not. was back then.
Yeah. Does that mean we're absolved from doing the Daredevil movie at some point on Everything is Super, or we're gonna just for completion have to take care of that?
I think people can go back and watch that episode.
All right,
that
well, episode. We'll see. But no, we've been doing this for a long time, and we've been flirting with the idea of launching a Patreon for a couple of years now. We're finally doing it. We're really pumped about it. We've got a lot of fun stuff that's on offer. We're creating a patron-only podcast feed, which is going to be the home of a new weekly movie club podcast called Post Show Recaps Theater, in which myself and a rotating group of friends and guests, including the great Emily Fox, we're going to be talking about a different movie every week. It's going to be community driven. That's going to be super, super fun. And we're going to have lots of other stuff that's just going to be popping up in that podcast feed. But Everything is Super is still going to be free of charge. Down the Hatch, The Lost Podcast, still free of charge. Many of these other shows that we've been doing, all of the shows that we have been doing are still going to be free of charge. There's just extra stuff that you can get should you choose to support us. We really hope you'll come along for the ride. We are launching this on October 1st. October 1st is when the Patreon is going to launch. You'll be able to sign up at patreon.com/postshowrecaps, or you can go to postshowrecaps.com/patron. Pledge at whatever level is comfortable for you that you can afford, or don't, if that is the level that you can't afford. You can't afford to pledge, that's totally fine for whatever reason. We would love to have you on board. We're really pumped about it, but it is completely an optional thing. The podcast continues apace. So just wanted to get that news out there up front here. I know Kevin and I, we've been talking for a few months now about this, so we're both really excited, and the rest of the host community very excited to finally launch the Post Show Patreon.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for a while, and it's wild to think how long we've been talking about it. But to get to this point, this finally launching is really exciting and really cool. Definitely excited for the content we're putting out there, hoping to get to interact with some fans more and have them yell at my face or, well, my digital face.
We have a Discord server, which is going to be a new community that we are launching for the Post Show Recaps patrons, which should be really interactive. I think it's going to be one of those things where we learn it as we go, all of us together. But I plan on hanging out in there myself quite frequently. So you will be able to basically directly, like, instant message us is basically how that is going to work, and instant message each other, other listeners of the podcasts. It'll be a great community driven thing. Not about the show community, though, maybe at some point. I don't know. I keep making that offhand reference. I've never watched Community. So
that is a mistake.
I just haven't done it. It's waiting for me. Maybe we will do some sort of community watch. The community watch maybe is a podcast that we can think about doing for the patrons. So we'll see how that all shakes out. Let's talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's like when you go to a fancy restaurant, Kevin. Remember those fancy restaurants? You go to a fancy restaurant.
I don't, because I never went to fancy places. I went to cheap places.
Well, when fancy restaurants were a thing, you'd go and you'd get like this really elaborate, like 100-course meal, I believe is what they used to do. And then like in between courses 90 and 91, there would be like, or 90, 92, there'd be course 91. And course 91, after you had like a luscious roast goose, was like a peach sorbet. It'd give you like a peach sorbet to like cleanse your mouth, cleanse your palate, calm you down, bring you back to reality so that you can be juiced back up with crazy flavors one or two dishes later. I think that that's how fancy restaurants worked. I might be a little bit off on the numbers.
At what point does Walter Goggins come out and talk to you in a weird accent while you were doing that? Walton Goggins.
Put some respect on that name, sir. It's Walton.
Walton Goggins. Yeah, sorry, my bad.
Anyway, Kevin, my analogy is that Ant-Man and the Wasp is the peach sorbet of the 23-course Infinity Saga. It's a palate cleanser. It's very sweet, very light. You will feel no bloat. You will enjoy the sorbet. You may not think much about it afterwards. You might not even be thinking much about it while you're consuming it. But you're not unhappy to be consuming it. And in fact, there will be many moments where you're like, oh, that little sweet peach flavor. Quite like that.
Yeah.
That's Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's a delicious little palate cleanser between Infinity War and the Captain Marvel Endgame 2 punch.
It's true, but like between this and Captain Marvel, it's like for Infinity War, they serve you half of a really delicious steak, and we're just like, okay, well, we're going to give you more steak. It's might taste actually better than the steak you had, but before we do that, here's some peach cobbler and another side of, let's say... when we get there, maybe I can think of a better analogy of what a dessert, maybe like some mochi, just something pretty good. And you're just like, oh yeah, this is delicious. But the entire time you're also like, oh man, but I'm going to get through this so I can get to that steak because that steak was really good. That's also, I think, part of it, right? Like, it's so weird. The like, I don't know, this analogy is losing it, but the weird placement, in my opinion, of this film, a very fun film, is so odd because like the entire time you're just like, okay, this is fun. This is cool. But like, well, remember how we saw everyone disappear? And then at the end of this movie, be like, yeah, that thing. Like, when we're still waiting for that, huh? We're still, okay, I get, oh, yeah, all right, we can get through this. This is fine. This is a nice, tasty meal, but, like, that steak, though. Like, I feel like that's the weird part about this movie. I think it's different now. I think now I can really savor that cobbler. It's like I went to the restaurant the first time, right, and I had a great experience, and my views on the meal were like, okay, that was a weird ordering. But now that I've gone back a second time, I'm like, I can enjoy this peach cobbler because, like, I know what the steak is. I know how that's going to turn out, and it's going to be really delicious. But there's no rush. There's no concern. Now I'm going to enjoy the taste and sweetness of this cobbler. And that's, I think, where I end up. Long story short, too late, is that this was a
fun movie. somewhere in here, that peach sorbet turned into a peach cobbler, and I'm not mad about that. Give me some of that sweet brown sugar granola crunch.
Yes, that's my nickname, brown sugar granola crunch.
Oh, man. I'm going to leave that right there. I'm not going to pick that up anywhere, Kevin. But I will. I don't know if you can tell. I'm very hungry. It's about dinner time here as we're podcasting Ant-Man and the Wasp. But yeah, I think at the time, Ant-Man comes out, you know, Ant-Man 2 comes out a couple of months after Endgame. And there's just like, there's the raw shock of what happened in Infinity War, I should say. What happened in Infinity War at the end is several characters died for realsies, apparently, and then many other characters have been snapped away into dust, and we don't know how they're going to come back. But we can feel pretty sure that they will, because Marvel did not go through all of that to get Spider-Man from Sony just to dust him, you know?
Although, Marvel didn't spend, what a move if they did.
That'd be pretty wild. Like, Marvel didn't, you know, spend all this time building up Black Panther just to dust that world. Like, that's not what's happening. Doctor Strange has been, like, Kevin Feige's, one of his most desired projects. They didn't just dust that character for us to never see them again. And we also know that contracts are running up for many of the original Avengers. And, like, Marvel is now just, like, a money-printing, you know, factory at this point. And these people command salaries that are probably higher than they'd like to pay, and some of these actors are also probably getting ready to just like move on with their lives and do different things, maybe come back someday, maybe not. So you know, based on the ending of Infinity War, that who we're left with is that essentially group of people that are most primed to move on, and the people who are quote unquote dead are the people who are most primed to continue on. So while there is that instant shock that happens in Infinity War, and it lingers for a while, the further away you get from that first viewing of Infinity War, now the discourse moves away from how that movie made you feel towards, okay, so what's going to happen next? And feeling excited about that and feeling energized about that. And the reason why, like, the stepping out scene in Endgame onto the battlefield is so satisfying is because it's the payoff of what all of your expectations were in, like, the year between Infinity War and Endgame, and somehow, like, all of your fan theorizing of what this could look like exceeded by, like, the grandeur and epicness of that moment. All of that is to say that Ant-Man and the Wasp fitting in here between the two protein-heavy entrees that we're talking about, the twin steaks, it's totally, totally fine for me to have something really light and sweet in the middle. Because by the time you're watching Ant-Man and the Wasp, you know that the tone that Ant-Man and the Wasp is going for is ultimately like the upbeat note that Marvel is going to be going for anyway. At the very least, the idea of like bad things will happen to people that you like and care about in these movies, but at the end of the day, we're going to continue making more movies with these characters. And here is a really happy family adventure about one of the great families in the Marvel universe as it currently stands. And there's maybe like some disjointedness about following up Infinity War with something just as sugary sweet as Ant-Man and the Wasp, because I really love this movie, but it's because it's a really light comedy. It's just a great Paul Rudd vehicle for Paul Rudd to do his thing. Michael Douglas, Evangeline Lilly is awesome as the Wasp. Is there really a bad guy in this movie? Is like something to talk about, or is like the antagonist more like the format of the movie? It's a heist movie. You know, it's really like kind of like that Elmore Leonard, like it's like a Justified episode. It's more of a Justified episode than a movie, is what it, and not just because Walton Goggins is in this. It really does feel that way. And all of that is totally acceptable and totally fine for me, because it serves, even in the real time, as a reminder of like, yeah, we know you guys aren't idiots. We know that you know that Spider-Man's coming back. We know that you know Doctor Strange is going to come back. We're just going to give you a little bit of Ant-Man right now to remind you that, hey, we're really fun here in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and B, Ant-Man's going to be important. You're going to want to really remember what Ant-Man's all about, because he's going to be a pretty big deal one movie from now.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, that's a really good point about what this movie, I think, does really well from a character and thematic standpoint. I will point out that I think what they do for Scott and Cassie in this movie is excellent. They do a lot, you know, despite all the other crazy stuff happening, to really delve into Scott and Cassie's relationship as, you know, father and daughter, their connection together, how important Cassie is to him. They have so much like fun doing their little maze heist at the beginning, their conversations. So they really built that connection. And I do think because they did such a good job here, that moment in Endgame is so much more powerful and so much more heartbreaking. This movie does a great job in terms of like the family parts of it. I think everyone, you know, it's better than the first one. I think, you know, I thought this going in, and I coming out of it, I definitely agree. I think it's better than the first one because I think they do so much more work in terms of like utilizing the power in much more fun ways, from growing and shrinking and turning Paul Rudd into a toddler sized human at one point. That part was amazing.
I laughed so hard at that.
So hard. And you have Evangeline Lilly, who I think is so much better in this movie, because I think they gave her character so much more to do. And, you know, gave her a better hairstyle. Like, look at my hair. I'm
that
all
matters,
business.
I know.
Like,
yeah,
that moment.
Although they lean into that. Yeah, they,
yes,
lean, into
they
that
lean into that in Luis's story so well.
Yeah.
And also, you know, beyond that, even as something as little as having, you know, a big complaint in the first movie is that you have Bobby Cannavale and Judy Greer, and you do nothing good with them in the first one except make them like shrew, kind of mean people. And you're just like, oh, that sucks. They're such comedic, like they're so such great comedic presences. And even in this, they turned them from that into actually just like also happy, supportive people. And it's shown through for me, for those characters who were barely in it, to still be great. I still like them in this. I even like you said, there is no real bad guy, it feels like, which is unfortunate, because I think they do a good job with setting up Ghost in an interesting way. And I really love Ghost's, you know, Ava and Bill Foster's relationship in this, I think, is really great. I love that ending outcome for them. So there's a lot of bits and pieces that were really fun, and I think they really did an amazing job with, especially coming out off of Infinity War, to give you that palate cleansing deliciousness that was just, here's some comedy fun. But that's the thing, right? When it's over, like you said, it's just like, all right, that was fun. That was great. You know, it left a wonderful taste. But we're going to end up moving on in a very weird way. But we get more of that, this character, of course, coming out of it. It's very odd for that reason. Like, watching it was super enjoyable. Once it's over, it's just like, okay, cool. I guess we're going to be on to the next one now, in a way that the other movies didn't feel like I was doing that with, if that makes sense.
It does. I would, so what I would say in response to that line of thinking, which I don't think is like your predominant feeling towards the movie, But like, I think that that is like a predominant feeling towards the movie for people who are like fairly low on it. That like, it's like, it just like doesn't really add up to much. It's just sort of whatever. I think they're overlooking a lot of very, 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 very gut-bustingly, genuinely hilarious moments. First of all, this is a really funny movie. It is like toddler Paul Rudd is incredible. Everything with Luis is incredible. The runner of It Is Truth Serum is really, really, really good. There's just a lot of moments like that that are just like outstandingly funny. Paul Rudd doing his Michelle Pfeiffer impression. You know, there's a ton of good in here. Even Michael Douglas, when he picks up Paul, how was school today?
Great. So great. Do you want a juice box? Are you serious?
You want a juice box? Yeah. Oh, he seems cranky. You need a nap? You know, it was just unbelievably very funny and incredible. And it's just such a charming movie. So if you think that this movie just has no value, I just don't agree, because this movie makes me really, really happy. And so on two fronts, I challenge the notion that this movie is just like totally whatever and forgettable. The first one is we live in the darkest timeline, and any excuse to get a really good belly laugh, I'm going to take. And Ant-Man and the Wasp is filled with them. It's loaded with gut-busting laughter. I was watching this movie and just wall-to-wall, I just had such a fun time. I was just so happy to be spending that much time with Paul Rudd. The second thing is, here in the darkest timeline, Kevin, we are now entering a place where, at the soonest, the Marvel Cinematic Universe will be absent from theaters for very close to 2 full years. It will be, I think, 22 months between Spider-Man Far From Home and Black Widow, which is coming out a full year after it was supposed to come out. And there's a whole conversation to have about that that I actually really don't want to have right now.
Yeah, now's not the time for this.
I'm not in the mood, and it's not happening on the Ant-Man and the Wasp podcast. Do not at me. But what would you prefer? Would you rather a year with no Marvel movie or a year with Ant-Man and the Wasp? You know, like, I think that this is a movie that is like at a level that if this was like the one Marvel movie that came out in a year, certainly right now, like if we were only able to get like one movie out to like Disney Plus or whatever right now, and it was of the quality of Ant-Man and the Wasp, I'd be really happy about that. I'd be very, very happy about that. So I don't know. This movie makes me happy. It's got a lot of actors I really love. Walton Goggins' character is totally whatever, but I love Walton Goggins. So it's just fun for me to see him in another like heist context. That's the villain of the movie, Kevin, is just the chase.
Yeah, I guess so, right? Because there's no, I mean, I don't know. You know, during the Black Panther podcast, we talked about the definition of antagonist, and I don't even know if necessarily like I guess by the definition, maybe Walton Goggins, but like Ava and Bill Foster / Goliath are sort of against the heroes, but they have their own reasons. But like the heist is it a heist? There's a lot. That's the other thing. Maybe it is like also what makes this movie weird is that it is just a comedy without like a real linchpin, like villain / motivator that felt as strong as even the previous movie. But yeah. Like Walton Goggins, for me, the only reason he exists in this film is a plot device to have the ending chase sequence. That's it.
Yes.
Like there's no other reason the character exists, which is wild and weird to have in the movie. But again, all of it presents like a lot of fun stuff to watch. It felt very weird for that reason, but like very enjoyable throughout. And like you did bring up Luis, and I didn't mention them in my rant about the stuff that's great, but absolutely the three amigos are so great. When he starts, when one of them starts bemoaning about Baba Yaga, what a hilarious.
Baba Yaga.
So good. Yeah. Like there's just comedic gold.
talking about John Wick.
Yeah. And you just have so much great stuff in there. And like Paul Rudd is a great call out because like, you know, in the similar way of Doctor Strange being odd as a movie, because we're just like, we don't like the origin story feels like it's holding. We want him to be the thing he's going to be because that's the version of the character we really like. The first movie was great and we got a little bit of Paul Rudd being Paul Rudd. This is full Paul Rudd. He is Paul Rudding it all over the place and we love
barfing
it for
cards.
That. Yeah, it's great though because it works so well because we like Paul Rudd and we like him as this, just being Paul Rudd as Ant-Man. And so we got a lot more of it this time around. So I think, again, turning it up, just skip origin stories from now on, I guess, is the real moral of that. And we could have gotten this a lot sooner. But yeah, the card stuff is great because I also love close-up magic, as you know, as a huge fan of the Magic Castle. So that was great. Randall Park is in it and is so good, and it makes me so excited because I think he's going to be in WandaVision. Like,
yeah, that's the news. Yeah,
yeah, it's just there's so much. Like you said, there's so many great actors and so many bit parts that I think work really well for this movie, despite its context. I guess that's the thing. This movie is really funny and really fun and super enjoyable, despite the context in which it exists in the broader sense of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
How about this? Sometimes you want a big feast, and other times you just want cotton candy. Sometimes you just want cotton candy. And cotton candy can be delicious if you make it right. And honestly, sometimes like a cotton candy can be delicious even if you made it wrong. It is cotton candy.
It's just sugar. All, it's just delicious, you know? Sugar.
But this is like great cotton candy. It's total fluff, but it's really well-crafted fluff. I think like across the board, I find these characters in this movie delightful. I'm trying to think of a character in this movie who I don't find delightful. The one that comes to mind is like the traitorous federal agent who just gets ghosted by Ghost. And that's barely a character. I'm inclined to appreciate the Walton Goggins character more than the average bear, specifically because of Justified, because he was so great on that show. And anytime he shows up and does sort of like his like bad guy pomp, the way that he kind of like puffs his chest out and just chews on dialogue, the way he spits out words, I'm just inclined to really enjoy his style. So I really love him in this, but I don't think that he's a good character. But I enjoy watching the character. I enjoy watching everybody. I love Jimmy Woo, great character. Incredible character. Goliath. Great to have Goliath around. You got Lawrence Fishburne here. Lawrence Fishburne in the house. Maybe they'll do some more stuff with him. That could be fun. He's in the universe now.
I love Lawrence Fishburne so much, and I did love him in this role, but I can never look at the character of Goliath with a straight face, because in the comics, first of all, in the comics, his name was Black Goliath because of King Corset was.
Wow.
And second of all,
I did not know that.
Yep. Yup. And second of all, the one specific thing I remember about this character is that when Marvel Comics did Civil War, which was the original comic book version.
Spoilers for the Marvel Civil War comic book coming up. So skip ahead if that matters.
Skip ahead,
to
10
you.
Years old. But there was a whole marketing push campaign for various parts of it. And it was like in the middle of the series. Because if you were in comics at the time, it was such a ridiculous moment. They released this weird advertisement. And as a person from marketing, I'm just kind of like, what the? But anyway, they released this weird advertising, which is just like, in this issue, someone will die. And they do the thing where they show pictures of various characters, and you have like Sue Storm, you're like Tony Stark, you've got
like
all these
important
major characters, and then you have one Black Goliath, or I'm just gonna call him Goliath because at that time I think they dropped the black part of it. And then Goliath, and anyone looking at this poster is just like, so Goliath, right?
Oh, they're gonna kill Goliath,
and
right?
Then sure and enough, then they,
Doesn't like Thor punch a hole through him or something
robot
like that?
Robot Thor uses lightning and shoots a lightning bolt through him and kills him.
Yeah.
And it's just one of these things where I'm just like, why did they think this ad was a good idea? How did they assume anyone would think otherwise than Goliath would die? Like, there's so much there about it. And I will have that memory forever of like, fucking comics. Just like,
do we think is Goliath alive in the comics now? Do we know?
No, I think he's been dead since.
They haven't even resurrected Goliath. Come on, guys.
Yeah, I think they've resurrected Banshee, who was dead for a long time.
Everyone comes back eventually.
Yeah,
he'll
Banshee
come back.
Got hit by the X-Jet. That's how he died. He got hit by the X-Jet.
I remember. It was a tough trip home. For Banshee.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember his name.
Sean Cassidy.
R.I.P. Yeah. But I love Lawrence Fishburne show. Like, Sometimes I guess it really just depends. Like sometimes I get mad at a movie of this size bringing in a big time actor and just like having them for like kind of like a role that's a little bit of a waste. Like I know we talked about this with the first Ant-Man and like your feelings on Bobby Cannavale. And for me, it's like I kind of love him in this role, and especially in Ant-Man and the Wasp where he's just like, "Come here, you." Like I love that. Like both him and Judy Greer are just like so accepting of Scott at this point, and that they're all just like so happy with the family and everything like that. And even like the limited use of Lawrence Fishburne as Bill Foster, I just love the idea of like, I don't know, I think having a very familiar actor in that capacity as somebody who comes from the Michael Douglas era of superheroism from the Hank Pym school, like it helps. Like it, like now you've got like him, you've got Hank, you've got Bill, like you can place Peggy Carter there, Howard Stark, like it's just like fun kind of like headcanoning some of that stuff. So I really like Lawrence Fishburne in that role. I hope that they do more with him eventually. I hope it's not just one and done. It might be. But this is just like one of a couple of characters. Ghost is really hyped up as the bad guy of the movie. And I think for our official rankings, we're just ranking Ghost, even though she's not like, she's somebody who's just been through hell and back. And I really love the performance of this character. And I really love the take on this character. Cause I think that you can check me on this. My understanding of Ghost as a character from Marvel Comics is that Ghost is typically a man, but yes. I think that Ghost's identity has either always been shifting or has just never even been revealed at all. I know that it's like, it's pretty tight, it seems like. And Ghost is typically like a corporate espionage, like assassin, basically.
Yeah, my biggest familiarity with Ghost was from the Thunderbolt comics. When Ghost was a part of that, I believe, like right before the Norman Osborn taking over the Marvel Universe era. But yeah, I don't remember if the character's identity has been revealed, and I'm certain someone with a hardcore Marvel Comics history buff is going to come at me on that one. But yeah, usually a guy and like definitely a bad guy. Like I don't remember Ghost ever being like as ambiguous as this, as having such a tragic story.
Would twirl a mustache, should a mustache exist beneath the mask? You know, like that is what Ghost is like in the comics to my memory of that character. But I think like it's like a character that is probably coolest for its design and power set. And so it makes that a character that is really easy to adapt in a way that you can place some interesting new ideas about family and identity onto, and what pain means. And I think that Ghost in this movie becomes a really cool vessel for those ideas. The idea that like she's just in constant physical agony, right? Like she's just being like atomized and re-atomized daily. It's just like such a hardcore concept. And I think that the movie does a really good job of, at least for me, like really feeling a lot of empathy for that character. I think when it comes to rating her, like it's a hard one to rate because I don't think she's a great bad guy. Like she's somebody who, like, I can imagine in Ant-Man 3 or even like a future Avengers movie being someone who, like, they could utilize. They have this character in the universe now. She's a really cool character. She has a really cool look. She's got a great backstory. With her comes more Lawrence Fishburne, so bring them both back, please. I think that they have a lot of potential that they can do with her, and sort of like, maybe like the shorthand way of saying it would be like sort of like a Nebula type of arc, I think, is something that they can do with her. So I really like the character. It's just like not really a bad guy, like a force of antagonism, because there's, you know, a lot of people with conflicting agendas. If there's an antagonist, Kevin, I think it's like the ticking clock of, we got to get Janet now. And all of these other people want my thing that is preventing me from getting Janet. And it's really like if the clock strikes midnight, we're toast.
Yeah.
So it's really like it's the format of the movie that I think is the bad guy more than anything.
No, I think you're totally right. Like knowing that they only have a little time to get Janet and things keep getting in the way, the ticking clock becomes the main villain. And I do think, you know, part of the strength of the phase three that we've talked about is how well they've done the villains, of how well they've made some of the villains sympathetic and you can empathize with them and you can understand them. And I think they may have done too good of a job with Ghost in this, in that we totally understood her, but because she wasn't the main antagonist, we didn't connect with her as much as we could in terms of like, how do we feel about her as a villain?
Right.
So I think that is the misstep there for that character. Because, like, yeah, the character's like really compelling.
If you rewrite it without the Walton Goggins component and, like, you just lean harder into it being a tug of war between two sides, it's the Ant-Man squad and it's the Ghost and Goliath squad.
Yeah, I think you could have really done a lot more of that character and made her possibly even higher than she ends up being, I think, on the list of stuff. But I, you know, that all said, I do think, yeah, the power set's really interesting. I do appreciate that they did not go too long with the, like, oh, Ghost is like Ghost. Check out this person is Ghost, and then they think it's a guy, and then reveal it's a girl. Like, they didn't do that with this. I'm really tired of that trope. Like, the Samus Aran of it all for Metroid. Like, that's the origin of this trope, basically. And I'm over it. Just yeah. We don't have to be surprised that it's a female character. We're let's just make that be a standard now, guys. It's okay. But, you know, that all said, and I am loath to say this too, but, like, I will say that the actress does a phenomenal job in that role where that was given. And also, like, I remember being in the theater, and when the mask did come off, though, and I saw that actress for the first time, she is stunning. Like, it was definitely a moment of Kevin being taken aback by someone being insanely stunning. But yeah, and I, like I said, I really like what they did with her and Bill Foster. I thought that relationship was great. This movie is very much about, like, fathers and daughters and, you know, parents and their kids and everything. And it really, I like at the ending, it wasn't that either one was going to betray the other in a terrible way or break apart. I like that Bill refused to leave her and is there to help her. I thought that was really touching and really well done. And I think Lawrence Fishburne did, you know, a great job conveying that, even though the character didn't have a lot to do. I think Lawrence Fishburne is so talented and his chemistry with Ava was so good that they were able to, like, pull that off and have it still be feel like, you know, they still felt impactful despite the fact that we weren't with these characters for that long.
I think maybe another crime of the existence of the Walton Goggins storyline. Again, I love him, so I enjoy him when he's on screen, but maybe the movie is better and, like, actually pops more. Is, or I don't know, I think maybe it could take away from the comedy of it. But is there a version of this, Kevin, where, you know, this is Ant-Man and the Wasp, and, like, the most obvious way in which this is Ant-Man and the Wasp is that, like, finally Evangeline Lilly and Hope Van Dyne get to don the costume and she gets to kick ass and she's really the bruiser of the two. And she's super awesome in that role. And as a Lost nerd, obviously very happy for Evangeline Lilly. Is this movie improved if there is more Janet Van Dyne? Is there too little Janet Van Dyne? It's huge casting. Michelle Pfeiffer as Janet Van Dyne is really cool, even though I know a lot of people were sad that it wasn't Catherine Zeta-Jones, so we could just keep Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones together. That'd be fun. But Michelle Pfeiffer is an enormous superstar, and yet she's, like, in it for a few minutes. Is it just too little of her? I think maybe a little bit.
I think it is, especially because our connection to, like, that's the other thing. The need to save Janet is very much these characters wanting to feel that way, and they're telling us about it, and we get it because it's you know, Hope's mom. But in terms of the audience connecting to that, it's less because we only got really introduced to her, like, as Michelle Pfeiffer in this movie at the very beginning. And so to have this be the ticking clock, to have that be the countdown, right? That be the antagonist and villain. They're rushing to save someone that the audience only really connects with because the characters are telling us how important that person is. That becomes a problem, I think, narratively for hooking us. I really love Michelle Pfeiffer, Catwoman, OG, like, well, not OG, sorry, Eartha Kitt. There was Lee Merriweather. There's a lot before that, but of my era of watching Batman, you know, Batman Returns, Michelle Pfeiffer, Catwoman, like.
Should they have cast Sean Young as Janet Van Dyne instead of Michelle Pfeiffer?
Rumor had it that Sean Young did show up in a Wasp hand-built costume. But no,
we are old, all of us who understood that reference.
Yep, anyone who got that reference, we are old. But, like, I love Michelle Pfeiffer. I liked her in this. I wish we did get more of her. This also fell prey to, I think, something that Aquaman did, where it's just like the actress that you knew from the older generation is going to be in this movie, and you won't see her for a while. And when she shows back up, you'll see her youngster show back up. She's older now, but she's wearing the armor she used to wear, or the costume, and now it's like it's a very, very much a thing that happened literally at the same time. So it's very odd. And also, they both have white hair now. Like, just there's so much crossover weird tropism on that one, but. I wish there was more to help us connect to her better. So we really, that counting clock felt a little more impactful. That said, she's Michelle Pfeiffer, man. Like, just, she's great.
That does a lot of work for you. Yeah. But I think that does a lot of work for it. Is like, it's Michelle Pfeiffer. So you already like have a lot. Invested, like they gotta save Michelle,
right? Like, you know, <It's> like, and then, you know, there's the oddness of having her and Hank connect in the quantum realm, and this is gonna get weird into the other part of this movie that I think is odd, is that the science makes no sense, because when she meets Hank in the quantum realm, she has aged, as mentioned, so she is about as old as Hank is. But they sort of establish in Endgame that when you're in the quantum realm, time doesn't move as fast. So he was only in the realm for a short period of time, whereas 5 years had passed in the real world. So how are Janet and Hank around the same? Like, there's a lot there that doesn't make sense. Why does the building need to be big in order for her to come back out? They really never delve into that, besides saying, like, that's what needs to happen to add an extra element. Like, I think if you delve that into this movie a little bit more, the science of it, more than any other superhero movie, I think, becomes really wonky and weird and nonsensical. And I don't know why this one specifically, but it does. So there's that aspect of it all, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, again, like, it's weird to, like, criticize all that stuff, because, like, at the same time, you're watching it and there's a giant Hello Kitty Pez dispenser flying through the air at a guy on a motorcycle. And that's really cool. Them having that, like, Hot Wheels, toy kit, and it's all the cars they can shrink and grow is fantastic. That's such awesome use of the power. Like, I love that stuff. The giant salt shaker, like, all the stuff of the power uses was so much fun in this movie. Way more than I think even in the first movie. As much as I love that ending fight sequence, I think this one took it to the level of just all the action sequences are that now.
I think the action scenes in this movie are solid across the board and just like fun. You know, they're just like fun caper things. Like, I think when you stack them against a lot of these other scenes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I don't know. I think I would take most of this above most of the Phase 1 stuff, like short of First Avenger and the First Avengers. You know, I think that they've upped their game in this regard. I think it could be, you know, I think Iron Man 3, like, certainly the final battle, I'll probably have that higher than the final battle in this, which is, you know, the final battle in this, I think, is just pretty average, but fun.
Right.
But not like fun and stand out the way that the final battle was in the first one.
Yeah, and the final battle here is barely a final battle. It's more like the final chase sequence, right? Because it is, yes. That's really what it's all about, which is very different, and I commend them, like, in a similar way of Doctor Strange doing
something
different.
Maybe that's what this is. Is this a chase movie?
I think that's maybe more, like, make more sense, right? It's a MacGuffin movie. Everybody's chasing after the same thing and trying to get to it before the other people do. So I think that's
maybe more
right.
I mean, it's like a Romancing the Stone, you know? It's like a, you know, for Michael Douglas. Like, it's like a little bit of that. It's like these, like, you know, the co-leads who are, like, a little bit of a will they, won't they on some sort of adventure to find a thing and protect a thing. Like, that's the movie. It's sort of classic in that way. Like, not especially exciting, not exactly like reinventing the wheel, but like, I feel like it's underselling it by calling a competently made version of that. I think it's like a really well made version of a movie that has a pre-existing blueprint.
Yeah. And I that's what some of these Marvel movies have ended up being, right? But we've talked about superhero movies recently gearing towards like being more a chase movie that's also superheroes, a Western that's also superheroes or whatever. And I think maybe this does fall into that category of the adventure chase sequence, right? Like Romancing the Stone, if you will, or, you know, what was it? River Nile or whatever. The other one that they did.
Jewel of the Nile.
Yeah. You know, like, so like maybe more along those lines, although at that sense, you know, They did the wrong casting for Janet Van Dyne, unfortunately, but that's fine. What's something that
Who's that? Kathleen Turner, right?
I think it's Kathleen Turner.
Yeah. That would have been great.
The something we didn't mention actually that is actually at the top of this movie that I wrote down is Paul Rudd is very clearly all of us in quarantine, right? Like that opening sequence of him entertaining himself has hit a lot harder now because that's just us, like all of us, like, ooh, how do we keep ourselves entertained in the mad world that we're living in right now?
Yeah, for sure. I really love that sequence. It truly does make me happy. Kevin, I want to talk about something that, like, we haven't really talked about too much because mostly we've been talking about movies that have like answers to the things that they're setting up. So that is sort of like the territory that we're going towards. But now we could start talking a little bit more about what like sequels to some of these movies are going to look like.
Ooh.
There's going to be an Ant-Man 3 that's announced.
Yes.
Peyton Reed once again returning. And I think that there is a lot of speculation around this one. There is some casting. Jonathan Majors of Lovecraft Country, the other podcast that Kevin and I podcast about here on Post Show Recaps, alongside the legendary LaTanya Starks, has allegedly been cast to play a Marvel Comics character, a Marvel Comics villain, an iconic one, named Kang the Conqueror, who is often associated, I think, with the Avengers, but often associated with the Fantastic Four, and importantly associated with the Young Avengers. And I think that there's a lot of speculation that Marvel will one day unleash the Young Avengers. And for those who do not know who the Young Avengers are, they are the Avengers, but young. No, it's not quite Muppet. It's not quite Muppet Babies. It's not like the Muppet Babies version of the Avengers. It is like people who are like either connected to members of the Avengers or aren't, but have like kind of like code names and associations that are sort of similar. Like there's, who are some of the characters? There's Wiccan.
There's Wiccan. Hulkling. There's Speed, Hulkling, Iron Lad, who will be important to the Kang the Conqueror part. What is Cassie's name? There's a Hawkeye. There we go.
There's a Hawkeye. There's Mrs. America.
And there is a Cassie. Cassie Scott Lang's
stature.
Yeah. Daughter is the giant grow person in that in that crew. Which is this movie. So yeah, this is wild because that casting brings up so many things that like made stuff make a lot of sense to me and then also just raises a little more questions because, you know, Cassie in this movie talked about, oh, being a hero, like, oh, is she going to take over as his sidekick? And it's like, no, it's the Wasp and all that stuff. But now we know Cassie, when he comes back, is a teenager, the right age to be Young Avengers. They introduced a kid from Iron Man 3 as a teenager now at the end of Endgame. There's extremely importantly, WandaVision. WandaVision is also setting up the possibility of introducing Speed and Wiccan. So there's a lot here that was like Young Avengers could be a thing. Then you throw in the wrench slash linchpin of Kang the Conqueror, and you could have, very well have, a Young Avengers thing happen because Kang the Conqueror is
Very important.
Very important, but like he is a time-traveling supervillain.
Yes.
And when you have a sequence like this now where you have these people set up that could be possible Avengers in the future and you have a time traveling villain, there's a lot that can play into this. And now you have things with multiverses. You have things with divergent realities that they've already been teasing. And I really feel like, oh, the idea of Kang the Conqueror totally makes sense as a big villain that could really bring together what the next iteration of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to be. That said, I am sort of stupefied that they are introducing a possible major villain of the MCU in the third Ant-Man movie.
I know.
That's nuts to me. I'm kind of stunned. But even beyond that, there's another part. But let's, before we get to the second half of what Kang the Conqueror could mean, I definitely want to hear your thoughts on this part of it, on the Ant-Man part of it, and on the time travel Young Avengers part of it.
Yeah, so I think that, so Peyton Reed directs the Ant-Man movies, and Peyton Reed famously, if you're like a comic book movie nerd, was trying to direct the Fantastic Four when the Fantastic Four was at Fox. And he had like a vision for them in the 1960s and everything. And so he has long had a great interest in those characters. And I think probably like when you go back a year plus to one of the podcasts that you and I did, Kevin, when we were doing just like some of the pre-everything is super just random Marvel schmoozing that we used to do, I'm sure that we got into the idea of like Ant-Man and the Wasp movies could be a really great way to introduce the Fantastic Four, because you not only have Peyton Reed as somebody who is affiliated with that franchise and really has an affinity for it, but also it really fits thematically with the Ant-Man universe in terms of like the ideas of family that are at play in the Ant-Man movies. The idea of certainly in the second one being a movie about going and like recovering somebody who is lost. There is a great Fantastic Four story, or at least a memorable Fantastic Four story that takes place inside the quantum realm, that takes place inside the microverse. So there have been theories that the Fantastic Four are trapped in the quantum realm, that they've already existed, that they're somewhere already out there. So there's a lot of ways that you could imagine that fitting as an introduction into the MCU via the Ant-Man characters. But there's also this very compelling argument that the Young Avengers could be a group of characters that are introduced in an Ant-Man movie, not just because they are really affiliated with Kang the Conqueror, who is this time-traveling villain who, yeah, let's talk about the implications of that in a minute, especially as it relates to Fantastic Four. But there's Cassie, and the fact that Cassie, Scott's daughter, is now like 16 years old or something like that. She is in the exact age range to be Stature. This movie sets up her desire to be a hero in that regard. We have WandaVision coming out, which could introduce Young Avengers, as you say. We've got the Hawkeye show that's going to introduce, I believe, like the casting rumor, if it's not confirmed yet, has been Hailee Steinfeld for that, to play Kate Bishop, who's going to be a Hawkeye successor. There's the Loki show, Kevin, that Loki is going to be a TV show. And in the comics, Loki becomes a kid for a little while, Kid Loki, and Kid Loki is a part of the Young Avengers. So there's a lot of reasons, I think, to assume that the Young Avengers are coming and that Ant-Man and the Wasp could be a good vehicle for that. I think, Kevin, that Ant-Man and the Wasp could be a great vehicle to bring all of those things into the Marvel Universe. I think that the third Ant-Man movie could bring both the Fantastic Four and the Young Avengers in some capacity into the MCU. And I think it would fit because the Ant-Man movies have like been sort of like these stealth bombers of dropping really important things into the MCU. Ant-Man ends up being one of the most important movies in the MCU, and especially Ant-Man and the Wasp, because this introduces the quantum realm in a much more vivid way. So the first one is this really small movie that introduces this really big, small concept of the quantum realm. The second movie is this movie that introduces, that explores the quantum realm and introduces this very complicated idea of time travel that's going to be essential to the Marvel Cinematic Universe in Avengers Endgame. So the third movie could be this thing that now has time travel at its disposal, and the implications of that can only be huge. So much like Scott Lang, the Ant-Man franchise could very naturally just be getting bigger. And I think that a third Ant-Man movie will have this compelling task at its hands of being a movie that is going to have to introduce some really important new components, or at least is swinging to introduce some important new components, whether it's just Kang, forget the Young Avengers and Fantastic Four, already by introducing Kang, they're biting off one of the major Avengers villains and somebody who reportedly is going to be a big deal in the MCU moving forward. So it's already taking a big chunk out of a big picture idea. I think that the challenge is, how does Ant-Man as a film franchise take on such a big amount of food, just because we keep talking about food, while still being the Ant-Man movies, because the Ant-Man movies have this level of intimacy. Is there a way to both swing for the fences with some really big picture ideas and maintain the intimate qualities of the Ant-Man movies? I think that Marvel's work just generally would tell us that, yes, that is not only possible, but highly achievable. We just haven't really seen it in the Ant-Man movies because they're not transcendent. They're very good. They're very fun. They haven't done like major important work internally within the context of the end scope of their own like films as a unit, right? It sounds like the third Ant-Man movie is going to aim for that. That's very exciting to me. I'm really, really excited about the possibilities of this next Ant-Man movie.
See, I think that's crazy to me. To me, the Ant-Man movies are fun. They're great. They're entertaining. But they're also the Ant-Man movies. They're not the most successful of the Marvel films. They're very odd in their tonality. To introduce such a major... And again, for all we know, it could be 2 seconds of it. He just shows up and he's like a weird presence showing up in the movie. Like, he shows up for a second in Shang-Chi. He shows up a second in Ant-Man 3. He's just a presence leading up to a bigger moment. But like, Ant-Man, to introduce such an important character, such a linchpin possibility to the grander Marvel Universe in its third edition of it, is crazy. And either Marvel, again, thinks that it doesn't matter, people are just going to go see our movies regardless, and this will become a big blockbuster.
If it's called Ant-Man and the Fantastic Four or Ant-Man and the Young Avengers, that movie's making tons of money.
Sure, if they do that, right? And they very well could. But I think, like, Peyton Reed has done a great job. I would be, like, I'm just like, wow, okay, yeah, I guess. Give him the keys to this kingdom. But, like, to me, that's such a gutsy move. I'm curious to see how it plays out, and I'm not against any of it. It just seems, like, so wild and crazy and weird to do that. That said, you know, like, tying into the other half of it, talking about the fact, like, yes, Ant-Man introduced a huge concept, which is, of course, time travel. And you can absolutely see with everything that happened in Endgame and all the chicanery that's going on, you have this time-traveling person show up and be like, what did you all just do? Like, you know what I mean? Like, cause something to, like, have this guy show up at this particular point in time after they all mucked around with the time stream enough. So that totally makes sense. And now the biggest part of it, the part that we have danced around a little bit, and if this might be a possible spoiler, so if you are worried about what Kang is and who Kang is and how he ties into the stuff that we've been talking about, we've mentioned Fantastic Four. If you don't want to know that, I suggest you skip over this part right now.
And also to preface this, because I feel like I know where you're going, is that Kang's origins in the comics are like really convoluted.
Yes.
And there's like a bunch of different possible explanations for who Kang is. And
hence
how
why
Kang
I said the
became.
Possibility.
Mm-hmm. So like, this is all like speculative Marvel comic book nerdery that is about to come. But the potential implications of it are huge.
Huge.
So worth digging into. And I know that since the news of Jonathan Majors getting cast as Kang was announced, you and I have been excited to talk about this. And I feel like this is the proper venue for that, is because he's going to be in an Ant-Man movie.
Right. So that said, here we go. One of the possible connections that Kang the Conqueror has to the Fantastic Four is the revelation, I think relatively recently, that he is the father of Reed Richards. Which would be huge.
Mr.
Reed
Fantastic.
Richards is Mr. Fantastic. He is one of the four main members of the Fantastic Four, alongside Invisible Woman, Human Torch, and the Thing, Ben Grimm. Having this character introduced opens up the world of possibility of the Fantastic Four being introduced. And to me, most importantly, the fact mm-hmm. that Jonathan Majors is cast in this role means that there is a high probability then that Fantastic Four can be a Black-led cast, which would be huge and awesome. I mean, we were just, you know, the timing of this, I'll have to see, but Josh, you and I have just guessed it on a separate podcast that delved into sitcom territory, and we talked about a Black character that is a super genius.
Must Have Seen TV
is
the
correct.
Name of the podcast. Kevin and I will be appearing on an upcoming episode that you'll be able to listen to. So seek out Must Have Seen TV. Kevin and I spent almost 2 hours talking about Steve Urkel.
Correct.
Watch the Family Matters episode, Steve-el, from season 8. And then get ready for the Must Have Seen TV episode hosted by Brett White that Kevin and I were on. We had a very, very good time.
We had an amazing time. But that is the perfect example of, like, it'd be so exciting to have a black character like that on TV. Like, you know, I during that podcast, I mentioned that you don't get a black character that's essentially the smartest person in the universe. So to have that here in the MCU would be huge and incredible. So the implications of this casting is huge, and the possibility of where it could lead is massive. But again, it is crazy to me that it's the third Ant-Man movie mm-hmm. in which they might do this. And maybe it's because it's the only real next sequel that we're going to have. Because, like, you know, as unfortunate as it is, Black Panther is currently going to have to figure out what they want to do next. Guardians 3 is not going to be for a minute. Thor Ragnarok is coming, but that was not Ragnarok. Love and Thunder is coming, but that is going to be its own thing for sure. Or could be a possible Kang thing to introduce the old gods again. This is sort of the only real option in terms of, like, a crossover, a carryover from the previous iteration of the MCU into the new that they could do this with. So, like, maybe that's the reason, but what a weird choice to have it be Ant-Man.
Let me try and frame it in the context of the Marvel Cinematic Universe's own history, though, Kevin. The first two Thor movies are among the worst movies in the entire pantheon of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and then the third Thor movie is currently a lead contender for the best movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And those Thor movies are worse than Ant-Man is with its first two movies. With all of the lessons and all of the world building that has been done since even Ant-Man and the Wasp, is it possible that a similar leap could be done if it is such a different movie than the first two movies, but has these characters, has this heart, can treat this as like a landing point, basically, for characters like the Fantastic Four and the Young Avengers so that they can then springboard off from the Ant-Man franchise and lead their own franchises and stuff like that. Sort of how Black Panther appears in Civil War. Sort of how some of these past Marvel movies have set up characters who've then become vital characters moving forward. I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility. And in fact, the history of the MCU has a path in which that happens.
Except there's one difference, Josh. And again, nothing against the, you know, director of Bring It On. But Thor movies put in Taika for Ragnarok. There was a massive directorial change to change the ship direction of that franchise. And this is still going to be pay and redo. And again, nothing against pay and read. The movies are good, but they're not. There's not been enough evidence to me to see that the third Ant-Man and Wasp Ant-Man movie is going to be so groundbreakingly different as to handle something like this. And again, happy to be proven wrong. Happy to be proven wrong. Happy this is happening. But it's just, to me, as a literal nobody making a dumb comment on the internet because that's what we do on the internet, it is
Peyton Reed Twitter is coming
for you,
man.
Strange choice all I'm saying.
Sure, it's an odd choice. It is not conventional, but I'm excited about it. Peyton Reed strikes me as a very intelligent filmmaker with a real genuine love for these characters. Certainly when it comes to Fantastic Four, he's been thinking about them forever. As it comes to Ant-Man, he was a very late hire. He came in to save a movie and do his absolute best coming in with like no time at all. I think that he ups himself here with Ant-Man and the Wasp in a movie where, given its positionality in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is like literally deliberately intended as nothing more than like muscle relief. You know, this is like the Tiger Balm of Marvel movies. This is like the Arnica of the MCU. You just rub it on like your sore muscle and then you try and keep marching on towards the big stuff. And after like doing that, give him a spot where he gets to take a really big crack I just think that we could be in for a really big surprise with the ability. It's a curious choice, but there is a very established, probably like highly respected working relationship between Kevin Feige and Peyton Reed after Peyton came in and more than competently salvaged Ant-Man to the best of his ability, came up with a really rollicking good time of a comedy here in Ant-Man and the Wasp with great visuals. Like, the visual language of this movie, I think, is really exceptional. I love the quantum realm. I really love the effects on Ghost and like the lingering looks on Ghost. I love the size stuff. So I think that like, I think that he is somebody that Marvel Studios trusts because they have two movies worth of rapport. And this has been a guy who has been able to do what he's done with really tough circumstances, that I think that they believe in him as somebody who can take a shot at this. And I think on top of that, the Ant-Man franchise has a cast that is worthy of being the like the air support for something this big. I think that it's got Paul Rudd, it's got Michael Douglas, they are legends. They've got Evangeline Lilly, she's terrific. They've got Michael Peña, who is incredible. Imagine the world in which Michael Peña and The Thing are hanging out. So like, I think not just the filmmaker, but the cast here, they are all above and beyond ready to be at the center of a big event style Marvel movie. So I'm all for the idea of Ant-Man 3 being a gigantic movie. And I can't imagine that it would be a gigantic mess. I think it's going to be great. That's my hot take, is I think Ant-Man 3 is going to be like a top tier Marvel movie.
I don't think it's going to be a hot mess. My one last statement on it, because I don't want to spend a whole time being like, Peyton Reed, you're a fine director, you're fine. But is very much this. This is the movie, muscle relaxer or no. It is still a movie that was constructed and had a duty to tell a story and have a compelling antagonist and everything else. It has a strong cast, sure. Look at where it lands on our ranking. You have a person who still made this movie, and then where it lands in our ranking, which we're about to get to, is not going to be within the top five. And I probably don't think it's going to be within the top 10 from where I know that you and I have ranked it. So it's just one of those things where, yes, I understand what you're saying. But to do this with a movie and a franchise that the best one of the two is still not cracking a high spot, is you're putting one hell of a bet. You're betting it all on black, and let's hope that pays out when that roulette wheel stops.
Yeah,
is all I'm
sure.
saying.
I think that's totally fair. Let's live dangerously is my response.
Well, we do not have much longer to do so we might as well do it now.
Let's roll the dice. Let's see where we land. Let's see where we land with the Infinity Stone rankings. I think that's a good segue. Kevin, you and I are both a 4.5 on Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, despite so everything we that, said.
For all of that, we really like it. I was a 4.3 on Ant-Man. So for me, it's like splitting hairs a little bit as to which one I like more. I just really enjoy these movies. I just have a lot of fun with these characters, and I think everybody does a really good job. I think that this is just a funnier movie. I think it has it doesn't have a scene that is as impressive as the final battle of Ant-Man, but it's just fun. It's just wall-to-wall fun for me, so it'll be very close to where I had the original Ant-Man for sure, but it's a full point higher for you than the original Ant-Man.
Yeah, I just think they did a lot more for this movie, you know, the comedy especially, like I mentioned, the actors I think all shine through. I think all the actors had great moments. The pivots they made for certain characters I think were for the benefit. Randall Park, as we mentioned, being addition in here. I thought the villains were handled a little bit better. The villain was handled a lot better, I think, but still didn't have enough to really push it into the upper echelon of the previous villains that we had. And to me, I did think that this movie ultimately was better than, I think I looked back at my own rankings, better than anything I ranked in phase one except the OG Avengers. So, and I think that is true. I think obviously you're two phases later and they've learned a lot since. So I think in that way it stands above, but it's still, look at the streak we've had recently. We've had a streak of sixes. And so like even like a 4.5 is very good score. But it's also a point and a half lower from everything we've ranked in the last couple weeks.
100%. And I think it's totally fair for it to be that much lower. And I think that like a bunch of those sixes, we would break the scale if we felt we could. The audience is almost a full point behind us, a 3.6 for Ant-Man and the Wasp. And in fact, that average is lower than the original Ant-Man, which has an audience average of 3.7. So there's been a couple of times where we've been like really out of sync with the audience. We're really in sync at the top. We're pretty in sync at the bottom. And then there's like a little bit of like a mid-tier where we're just like a little bit out of rhythm. And that's where it is with Ant-Man and the Wasp. But our higher scores plus the audience average gives it a 4.2 total, which is, you know, relatively significantly above Avengers Age of Ultron. And it is just a hair underneath Iron Man 3, which is a 4.21. We had to make it that distinct. So Ant-Man and the Wasp is landing in at number 13 on our rankings. And I'm not surprised. I think that is, you know, it is maybe higher than I expected, in fact.
I think that's how we're doing, right? Like, if you look at what the audience would have said, which is, again, another reason if you're looking at the audience.
Sure.
Sure. To put, you know, the risk there. But I think that's the right place for it to be. I mean, I think it makes sense. It's almost, it's upper middle, right? Like, that's a good place for this movie.
We're closer on the bad guy, who's the ghost, Ava. You and I are both a 3.5, and the audience is a 3. So a 3.34, and that's going to put Ava at number 14 of 24 villains. She is smack dab between the Red Skull and Obadiah Stane.
Oh my God, I can't believe Obadiah Stane's that high, but that makes sense.
Yeah. Post-credits rankings. I think you and I are actually pretty out of sync on this one. I'm a 4 for the snap that deletes Wasp and the two Wasps and an Ant-Man out of existence. You're a 5 on that.
I am. I do think, you know, as far as post-credits go, it's a great moment. It sets up some stuff that is obviously going to pay off really huge. And even though you know in your head something was going to happen to them because timelines, it's a devastating reminder of what did happen. And just also the tragedy of just going through all this to get back, especially Janet, and then have them all blink out of existence, trapping Scott himself in the quantum realm, I think was such a like, oh man, like, yeah, stuff's, don't forget, stuff is as much fun as you had. There's heavy stuff and we're gonna see more of it coming in Endgame. So I really loved it for that reason. I thought it was a very fun, well, not fun, but exciting post-credit scene, one that we feel like we haven't had in a while.
Yeah, for me, it felt like going into the movie that like I expected that there were like the post-credit scene would be some of these people snapping. So there was like just no surprise factor to it. I guess the surprise factor is like just how thoroughly they cleanse the Ant-Man cast. So it's a 4. It's a good scene. It's just not. It's not everything that I look for in a post-credit scene. Whereas, meanwhile, the ant drumming on the drum set is a 5 from Josh Wigler.
It is much lower for Kevin.
Josh Wigler loves the ant drumming on the drums. I don't know. Call me a sucker for ants, Kevin, but I just really enjoy that ant marching to the beat of his own drum.
I much prefer aunties to ants. So I gave that a 2.
You said bye, Auntie.
Yeah. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's a fun moment. You're just like, all right. I really much preferred because we got I think a few more of those sequences throughout the movie. So I was kind of like, yeah, he's coming for Scott. He's doing his thing. So at the end, it was just kind of like, yeah, all right, sure.
Yeah.
So it didn't really hit me in the way that I guess it did you.
It was just cute. I love it. I just have a good time with it, and it's just like a totally meaningless, but it's super
cute,
fun.
Though I like ants enough, think so. But
I think he's cute. I like him. Good news for you. You are in line with crew, with the listeners of Everything is Super. Your 2 is lower than the 2.9, but that's a 2.9 versus my 5. So you're much more in line with them. And then the audience is sort of in between us on the snap post-credit scene, skewing towards you a 4.6. So that's enough to make the West Coast snap a top 10 post-credit scene so far. And the drumming scene is 22 out of 30. So pretty low. There's only so much I can bend to my will, Kevin.
Yeah, you tried real hard with a 5.
Final battle for Ant-Man and the Wasp. So this is just, you know, you and I have to land this one, and we've talked about like, is it even really a battle? It's a sequence. There's some punchy, kicky stuff to it. It is more a final chase scene, I think. But for the purposes of the ranking, I think we can rank it. But to my comment earlier that I think that the action in Ant-Man and the Wasp is better than everything in Phase 1 except for the first Avengers movie and Captain America the First Avenger. Captain America the First Avenger is at 14 right now, and Thor is at 15. So I would argue to slot Ant-Man and the Wasp above the final battle of Thor, which is like, you know, destroyer stuff and sort of like the really cheesy Tom Hiddleston versus Chris Hemsworth stuff, and the whole like, you're going to lose her, which I just don't love as much as I think you liked that.
No, I hated that. You were the one who were defending it, and I was like, are you kidding me? How dare you rewrite history in such a way?
The gaslighting didn't work. Damn it.
I think I found the real Kang the Conqueror trying to alter the timeline over here.
Dude, you know how I feel about time travel. So I would put Ant-Man and the Wasp behind Captain America the First Avenger.
I guess that's fair. What's above Cap?
Spider-Man Homecoming, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Iron Man 3, Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah,
I think that's the right spot for it. There was fun stuff, but even still, it didn't have as much fun stuff as the previous sequences had, I think, where it's like more everyday objects being grown and shrunk. This did have, as a perfect segue, a pretty fun Stan Lee cameo to me, but for a very specific reason. Is, of course,
it's just him like by a car, right?
Well, it's him by a car, and the car just shrinks in front of him, and he just says, "Well, the '60s were fun, but now I'm paying for it." I love that line. I love that description, because the '60s were fun is also like that's when he created all these characters, pretty much. And so now he's paying for it, where they're everywhere. But also specifically, the '60s were fun, and now I'm paying for it, and that car. That's an Endgame connection. Because in Endgame, when his cameo appears, it is the 1960s. He is a free-flowing hippie driving down in, I believe, that car, being like,
"Oh wow!"
Saying like, "Screw you," you know, when he does that. So I do think it's really funny to have that connection of the 60s were fun, but now I'm paying for it, considering it was outside of the place where Hank Pym was doing the Ant-Man stuff. So I do think that cameo becomes stronger because of Endgame.
All right, so let's talk about where we put that then. Is it better than his connection to the Watcher in Guardians of the Galaxy
2? No, never that. That's too good.
Is it better than him being super drunk at the Age of Ultron party?
No, I mean...
Is it better than him stealing the Black Panther's money?
No, but it might be next after that, I think.
Is it better than Crazy Stupid Fine?
I do think it is. Because of that, I just, as much as like Crazy Stupid Fine is really good, it's also Luis saying it and just having Stan Lee in a very Stan Lee way just be like, well, the '60s were fun, but now I'm paying for it, is just kind of really charming to me. And again, having the connection where we actually see him in the '60s as a hippie, you know, doing the like screw you man kind of a deal, I think is really, really fun.
Kevin, I'll give it to you. I'm sold. I think that's great. I'm especially excited now to get to Endgame and the Stan Lee cameo there that I've just been like kind of like not excited for because it's the last one. Is there one in Far From Home? I don't think so.
No, I don't believe there is. Home, yeah, unfortunately.
So I'm sad to get to the end of the line on that, but I'm now excited to see how that connects to Ant-Man and the Wasp. So great call, great pull. Captain Marvel coming up
next.
We're coming up to Captain Marvel. Really excited about that. I think that's going to be a fun conversation.
Yeah, I'm really excited to rewatch Captain Marvel. It's one that I have not seen since the first time. So this will be my second time ever seeing this movie. And I'm really excited to watch it now, and especially with a different context in mind, because, you know, the movie has a lot to do with the Skrulls, but spoilers for if you haven't seen these Marvel movies, the Skrulls are going to play a larger part, we now know, in a upcoming movie of a sort. So I'm really interested to rewatch it with that in mind and wondering how they're going to play with that. Because I do have a lot of opinions about what they do with the Skrulls in Captain Marvel and, like, the future of the MCU.
how much should next week's podcast be just us rocking out to grunge 90s music?
I mean, that's literally all I did in the 90s. I was a big Nirvana fan, so.
I'm pumped. I'm excited to talk about this. I love Brie Larson, so this will be really, really fun. Get your feedback in for that super at postshowrecaps.com. Subscribe to the podcast if you've not done so already. Your ratings and reviews, greatly, greatly appreciated. We've got plenty else going on Post Show Recaps. Of course, the Patreon, as we mentioned, postshowrecaps.com/patron or patreon.com/postshowrecaps on October 1st. That is when that is launching. If you would like to get in on the ground floor of the Post Show Recaps Patreon, your presence would be greatly appreciated, accepted, celebrated, feted. Kevin and I will talk to you about Marvel movies. You can join us in the Discord. It'll be a great time. And then, of course, we've got Lovecraft Country that is still happening here on the main feed. Kevin, you, me, and LaTanya, we're going to have an episode, episode 7, an episode 7 to discuss.
Crazy, crazy. So,
wow, we're getting close to the end of the line on that one. Also, of course, as Kevin and I have mentioned, we'll be on another podcast, Must Have Seen TV, Brett White's podcast. I think that you'll get another Everything is Super podcast before that one comes out. And if that is the case, we will pump that one up again. But just do yourselves a favor and go watch Stevel, the Family Matters episode, Stevel. It's just one of the best episodes of television.
Still, it's I've said the word wild a lot today, but it's wild.
Yeah. In which I believe we did take a moment to stop down and suggest, what if Steve Urkel, a.k.a. actor Jaleel White, was cast as Reed Richards in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Correct.
which would be absolutely incredible.
I would be so happy for him. Although, it'd be weird because he's just like, oh, man, again. But at least he doesn't have to talk in that voice, which you'll be ecstatic about.
My favorite fan casting that I've seen for the Fantastic Four is to basically just do the Good Place cast. And have William Jackson Harper as Reed Richards and Kristen Bell as Sue Storm. And I don't know how you divide up Johnny and the Thing.
Well, I think you have Manny Jacinto. Play Human Torch.
He'd be great.
Jimmy LeJamil play the Thing, which would be incredible. Yeah,
just in like rock CG, and then like they could have it be that they've escaped from the Good Place and they are just in disguise as the Fantastic
and Janet could be Herbie. There we go.
That's great. It works. I would love that. I'd be very happy about that. All right, we'll be back next week with Captain Marvel. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.